Twitchell's Book One, Dwindling Magic. Written and read by T.D. L. White. Chapter 28. Bad to Worse. The only reason that Nick hadn't melted into a puddle of his own terror was that, sitting on the wall facing the road, he couldn't actually see the rats. He held Cece tight. Too tight. The monkey gave a squeak and pinched the back of his hand. "Sorry," he said.
"Sorry," Zen replied. "Don't be sorry. I bet that any minute now, some creature will jump out and attack you, and when it does, me and Bobby can fight it."
Nick glanced around nervously. "I think the fighting's over. Merlina and the Master tried to stop a couple of vanfuls of the alchemist soldiers. Now there's two soldiers guarding door 13, and the rest of them are down at the auction."
"Only two up here," Bobby said sadly. "Still, it's a start. Two's better than nothing."
"I've got an idea," Zen said. "Let's gatecrash the auction and attack whoever's inside. Then we can fight our way up to the top and have the two on the door for dessert."
"Gatecrashed," Nick said, grabbing fistfuls of the inside of his gown to mop his sweaty palms. "How?"
"Well, technically we're on the clock, but the job was boring, so we're taking a break."
"Yeah, they're paying us to guard a gate, but there ain't no one trying to get in down there. Wish you told us you were up here." "Of course all the fighting was up here," Bobby said with a sigh.
"What gate?" Nick had a sinking feeling that he was going downhill fast.
"The underspace river gate to the lower sub-basement hall," Zen said. "You know, the way in from the Westbourne."
Nick didn't know, but he could guess. "And you're sure we can get into the auction from there?"
"Oh, aye. Getting in's fine. We're being paid to stop anyone getting out."
If his whole body and mind hadn't been screaming at him to run away, Nick might have imagined he was feeling more comfortable being around the two rats. Cece, warm and soft and decidedly non-rat-like, was the only thing keeping him from panicking. He checked his phone. Still no reply from Jenny or Ralph. They were deep under the Albert Hall, and there might still be a chance to get them out before the alchemist soldiers got to them. "So," Nick forced himself to stand up, but didn't turn around. "We can sneak in via the underground river, rescue Elf and Jenny, then sneak out again?"
"Well, I mean we could sneak," Zen said, sounding a little unsure. "Or we could smash our way in and fight them out."
"Let's sneak first," Nick said quickly. "I'm sure there'll be plenty of fighting after."
"Suit yourself," Zen said. "This way. Keep close. Getting lost in the underspace passages isn't something I'd recommend to anyone."
There was a rustling behind Nick as the rats scurried deep into the bushes. For a moment, he was simply sitting on a wall near the Albert Hall with a monkey in his arms. Then Cece wriggled free, pointed enthusiastically behind him, and tugged at his hand. "You go first. I just need a moment." Cece shook her head. "No, you're right. We'll go together." He took a deep breath, turned around, climbed over the low wall, and followed the two rats into the darkness between the leaves. At least the absence of light meant that Nick couldn't see the two creatures of the night leading him into unknown spaces beneath London. It also meant he kept bumping into things as he crawled between the bushes. Cece had it easy, scampering around with ease, sometimes beside him, sometimes in front or behind.
"Come on," Bobby said jovially. "We don't want to miss out on any more fighting."
"Grab the end of my pike," Zen called back. "I'll guide you. It'll be easier than watching you fumbling around like a drunk pigeon with its head on backwards."
The wooden end of the pike nudged into Nick's right shoulder. He took it awkwardly, now crawling with only one hand. But Zen was right. It kept him on track, and soon the leaves and earth gave way to a narrow brick tunnel. Or, as Nick found his head and shoulders scraping along the top while his knees were grinding against the bottom, it was less of a tunnel and more of a pipe, old bricks tightly laid and sloping steeply downwards. Some of them crumbled at his touch, the result of centuries of erosion from water and frosts.
"Watch your head. This place wasn't built for the likes of you, Zen said, too late to be of much use. Hang on, there's a torch up here I can light.
Don't, Nick snapped.
You like the dark, eh?
The rat sounded impressed.
Better keep a hold of the pike, then.
And it was in this manner, in the pitch black, being led by touch, that Nick descended through the layered strata beneath the Albert Hall. Bricks turned to flagstones, cold and hard, polished smooth by something other than the elements. Feet, perhaps, though judging by the low roof, more likely paws and claws. To even the impact of his palm against stone, Nick found himself frequently swapping the hand that held the pike. His skin throbbed, his trousers had holes in both knees, and his back ached from crouching. There were enough twists and turns that he lost all sense of direction. Drafts continually spilled in from tunnels off to the side or up above. A pitch-black maze. He gripped the pike tightly. Then the walls and floor changed again. Still rock, but now sandy, with no discernible flagstone edges. Perhaps this was the bedrock the city was built upon. The tunnel leveled out, and Nick stood up, arching his back and shaking out his cramped legs. A sound echoed through the darkness, like distant motorway traffic, but it couldn't be traffic. Is that the river? Nick asked.
Aye, the Westbourne, but we won't see it. We're parallel. Not far now.
Unfortunately for Nick, a newfound glimmer of light gave the two rats a silhouette. He'd almost forgotten what they looked like, how they moved. He pulled his hood down and stared at his feet as he walked. Even then, Zen's thick, scaled tail swayed into view every few steps, like a curious snake intent on unsettling him.
All right, we're there, Zen slowed. Now, just keep quiet and this'll go smooth as a pebble.
Nick looked up, which was a big mistake. In the flickering yellow light of burning torches, a mismatched platoon of hideous-looking rats lounged around on the steps leading up to an iron gate embedded in the rock. Nick froze. Ratoon, maybe, or a rattalion? Each rat armed and more dangerous than the next. Axes, knives, swords of all kinds. One had a hammer, a regular human hammer, its head encrusted with something black. Or at least it looked black in the torchlight. He felt a tug on the pike, and Nick looked straight down again.
"What we got here, lads?" one of the rats sneered. "Zen, you brought us supper?"
Cece, who had been walking ahead between Zen and Bobby, jumped back into Nick's spare arm in a move that was both comforting and unnerving in equal measure.
"Easy, boys," Zen's voice was smooth and confident. "We picked up a side job. This guest's got a little lost, and we're taking him back to the auction."
"Whoa, whoa," the first voice said. "We got orders. Nothing goes through this gate."
"Actually," another voice chipped in, "stuff can come through. We just got to kill it if it does."
"True," the first voice said. "And no one said anything about allowing no side jobs."
"Actually," the other voice chipped back in, "if it's not explicitly disallowed in the contract, then side jobs are fine, as long as there's no conflict of interest."
"No conflict of what?" a new voice said. "We're mercenaries. We're literally paid for conflict."
"I'm interested in conflict," Bobby said. "Very interested."
"Not now, Bobby," Zen said. "Yes, it's a permissible side job, and we're all down here to stop anyone coming out of the auction. That's what the contract said. Think about it. If we take these two in, then there'll be more for us to fight later, you know, if they try to sneak back out."
There were murmurs of general consensus until the first rat said,
"What if they don't try to sneak out? If we kill them now, then we don't have to take that chance."
"Now that is against the contract," the second voice said knowingly. "We can't kill them unless they come out through the gate."
"Oh,
look, how does this sound?" Zen said. "Once I've got them inside, I'll do my best to persuade them to sneak back out. And if they do, I guarantee that me and Bobby will step aside and let the rest of you do the killing. Deal?"
There was some muttering from the other voices.
"Deal."
A scurry of feet, rattle of a chain, the creak of the gate swinging open, and Zen led Nick into the lower sub-basement of the Royal Albert Hall. The gate clanged shut behind them.
Right, Zen said. Let's find ourselves a fight.
The transition from rock to flagstone to brick took place over a short, steep staircase. Electric lighting replaced the torches, and soon Nick was walking on wooden floorboards between dark, painted walls. He kept his head down and his hood low.
"Smell that," Bobby said, sniffing the air. "Is that mozzarella? And something with pastry and bacon?"
Nick tried, but couldn't pick up anything other than the varnished wood and perhaps his own sweat.
"Aye, reckon there must be a kitchen nearby."
Zen stopped.
"No need for us to be fighting on empty stomachs. A quick kitchen stop's just what we need."
Sensing a chance to put some distance between himself and the rodents, Nick asked, "Which way's the auction?"
"End of the corridor, take a right, up the stairs, then it should be obvious. Want us to bring you something?"
"No, I'll be fine, thanks." He waited until the rats had scurried away before pulling back his hood. "Great. Now I just need to rescue the others on my own." Cece hopped onto his shoulder and squeezed his ear. Following Bobby's instructions brought Nick and Cece to a large corridor with a high ceiling and a thick red carpet on the varnished floor. Much more befitting of the Royal Albert Hall. At the end of the corridor was a large double door. Before the doors was another staircase leading to a balcony. Cece pointed to the stairs. "Why not?" Nick said, bounding up them two at a time. The balcony was deserted. Nick bent low and crept slowly to peer over the side. The lower sub-basement hall spread out beneath him. It reminded him of pictures of the actual Albert Hall auditorium, but scaled down a touch. The seating, other than the small balcony he was on, was at ground level where the stalls would be. There was a large stage set up for the main event, with an auctioneer behind a rostrum to one side. Other than that, things were not right. Not right at all. There must have been fighting. Whole rows of chairs had been shoved over. The guests, who seemed to mostly have chosen Mage Lord outfits, with a smattering of dragonborn barbarians and sky-class rangers, and even a bulky dragon costume, had mostly gathered around the edges of the room. One of the dragonborn barbarians towered over the people around him, and it took a moment for Nick to recognize Collier, standing next to his mage lord uncle. On the stage, in the center, stood a figure in a black robe, more monk than mage lord, surrounded by a mob of dark-clothed soldiers. Well, soldier was being kind. In the light, their uniforms were faded grey, and their batons worn and chipped, evidence of the countless confrontations they'd endured. Nick scanned the guests and finally found Jenny and Elf in between the front row of seats and the stage on the right-hand side. They were next to the inspector, but more worryingly, inside another ring of soldiers. The inspector wasn't wearing his usual jacket, and there was a streak of blood on his forehead. The pocket of his shirt had been ripped off, and when he went to wipe the corner of his eye, it revealed that his hands were bound with rope. Other than their worried expressions and being surrounded by soldiers, neither Jenny nor Elf had anything obviously wrong with them. Something moved on stage. A microphone on a stand was dragged from the auctioneer's podium to the robed figure in the center. They leaned forward until the microphone disappeared between the hood, and a moment later two taps crackled out of the speakers.
"Ah, good. It's on."
The voice was deep and soothing and well-spoken enough that it would have fitted right in at Twitchell's.
"For those of you that don't know me, good evening, and pleased to meet you. Those that do know me, call me the Alchemist. Sorry about this inconvenience. I really didn't want to have to swoop in on such an exclusive affair, but I really needed to share some highly valuable information with you all. Plus, I'd like to offer you all a challenge."
They paused, and then went on.
"It's good news and bad news, really. First, the bad news. I'm afraid that this event has been compromised, and no, I'm not talking about my rather violent entrance, but a different, more underhanded activity that really hits below the belt. This whole auction is a sting operation. The authorities have infiltrated and manipulated the occasion to suit their needs.
Noise erupted across the room, a wave of discontent rippling through the guests. They were clearly not happy about this new information.
Yes, the alchemist said, I'm afraid it's true. Which means, of course, that they were going to wait until certain deals had been done before acting in a manner quite unbefitting. Luckily for you, I couldn't let that happen. So here I am, doing my bit for the greater good.
The alchemist made a slight movement that was more of a twitch than a bow.
That's the bad news over with. Now the good news. First, I have apprehended the culprit in charge of the infiltration.
One of the soldiers shoved the inspector in the back. Several of the nearest guests turned to take a look at him.
I have disarmed him, so now he's quite benign.
Another soldier held up the inspector's jacket and tie, as if to illustrate this point.
So, I hear you ask, what happens next?
The alchemist paused again. The crowd stayed quiet.
I will be leaving this hall and waiting in the lift. In 10 minutes I will be making my ascent. Should you wish to join me on that short journey, and perhaps talk a little business, then please ensure that you are sitting in one of these 6 seats.
They rotated slightly toward a row of chairs set up near the auctioneer's podium on the left-hand side of the stage.
Now, my helpers are not here to fight. They will be redeployed to ensure that nobody can leave here until 10 minutes have passed and the seats are claimed.
What about the auction? Someone shouted from directly underneath Nick.
Ah, yes, good point. I have commandeered the lots and will be keeping them safe. If there's a particular item that you are interested in, then please join me in the first lift and we can discuss it.
Nobody seemed happy about this, but there were no verbal objections.
What about that guy?
Somebody called out, pointing at the inspector.
Well, as I've said, my helpers will be stepping aside in a moment to ensure no one can leave. Any retribution or punishment that you think appropriate may be applied without recourse.
And those 2 girls with him? Another voice asked.
They are complicit in the act and may be judged accordingly.
They're nothing to do with this, the inspector shouted, and you know it.
My dear fellow, the alchemist said, do not blame me for your own shortcomings.
Why not just kill us yourself?
Elf shouted.
Are you a coward as well as a thief?
The alchemist paused for a moment and rotated toward Elf.
You are nothing to me. If you live or die, that is the will of the guests.
And if we join you in the lift? Elf spat. Can we talk business then?
I think you underestimate your opponents.
The alchemist turned back to the room.
These are some of the most ruthless cutthroats in the land, who have risen to where they are by cunning and by venom. Not to mention how exceptionally smart they are looking tonight. Makes me wonder how many of them smuggled weapons in with them, despite the efforts of the security team above ground.
The alchemist left the microphone and walked to the back of the stage. It was a strange, almost mechanical shuffle, 1 foot slowly in front of the other, until they disappeared through a side door. Then the soldiers started moving, more organized and efficient than their appearance suggested, some following the alchemists and others working their way to guard the exits to the hall. And finally, the soldiers surrounding Jenny, Elf and the inspector walked away, leaving them unprotected near the edge of the stage. For a moment, everything was calm and quiet. And then, as if responding to a silent starter's pistol, chaos erupted from the crowd. This podcast was brought to you by me, T.D.L. White. I'll be reading a chapter a week until it's complete.